Okay, great. This is, of course, the 10th of this cycle. We're going to be starting a new cycle in January 13th, so we're going to take a holiday break. And the new cycle should be really pretty exciting. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, what's going on. Again, for those who joined, this will be the last one of this cycle, and then we'll start another 10 on January 13th of next year, and we'll continue that. And it'll be exciting because it's going to carry us through a whole lot of things. Hopefully it'll carry us through the COVID, getting back to work with COVID, and there will be announcements of the new grantees that will occur during that cycle. There will probably also be announcements of the new RFA that will come out. And we're not sure. EPA probably isn't exactly sure when those dates are. But we could surmise, so we could do some planning and some strategic thinking. So that's all going to be occurring the next cycle. So, but until now, what we want to do is we're going to do a little bit of wrap-up and hit on a couple of topics. We're going to be talking about COVID this morning. We're going to be talking about the RFA review. We're going to be talking about expectations of next year. We're going to, if we have time, we're going to talk about the diverse environmental workforce, which is ties up the work we did with Zender, with Recycle Force, and Oregon Tradeswomen, and talking a little bit about what happens when we want to diversify our classroom, or if we want to diversify it, but if we do, how do we attract the people that, and how do we retain those people in our classroom? So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Okay. If we have time, and we'll put in the notes if we don't, I want to talk a little bit about charitable giving. This is the time of the year to do it. We've got some grantees who are excellent at it. And many of us take it for granted. We all have to talk about sustainability in our grant applications. But not all of us talk about charitable giving. And charitable giving donations, now, we all have partners where they do a lot of in-kind. Some give cash, some give their time, some give facilities. But I'm talking about charitable giving. And this is nice money because it's discretionary money. Comes in and you can spend it however you want in most cases. It is something that is perfectly encouraged by EPA. It's this form of leveraging. And it's something that isn't that difficult to include on your website, or if you're doing social media on Instagram. And I'm going to put, if we don't have time, I'm going to put some examples of, I think one of the better grantees that does this well is OAI. They have an excellent right on the first banner, as soon as you open their website, which I'll put in the notes, the first thing you're going to see across the banner, and the third one very prominently, is donate and how you could donate. And when you go to that donate, they talk about all the wonderful things they're doing. And certainly having the mechanism, whether it's through a GoFundMe or a Smile, Amazon.com or PayPal, or you might have a more sophisticated website, you can figure out a way of doing that, or just sending checks in to you. But you would be amazed at how well people have done over the years in doing that. We had a particular grantee, and they're an alumni now, JFY in Boston. They would have symphony nights in their name, and they collected tons of money. Boston's a very philanthropic town, but many of our bigger cities, bigger grantee cities, have this resource that they may not have thought about. And I just want to speak a little bit about that later, for you to think strategically next year, and as you start thinking about your website, how you might incorporate charitable giving and donating into your program. So let's go back to the very beginning, and we're going to be talking about what's happening in Washington and a little bit about COVID and what's happening there. So for that, I'm going to turn this over to Heather. What's new, Heather?
Well, you know, as we all know, it's kind of a similar thing to what we've been talking about. This is really quiet times from HQ. They're kind of in that the long winter, the kind of the quiet review process time. So, you know, things are really pretty quiet from HQ. There's no new news from the HQ side of things. But as always, we want to remind people just to remember that Brownfields 2021, go ahead and put that on your calendar if you haven't already. Brownfields 2021 is slated for September 27th through the 30th in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. If you want to learn more about it, please go to brownfields2021.org. Again, that's brownfields2021.org. Something to keep in mind, though, as we are rounding out into the new year, they will go ahead and be posting a new call for ideas. So if you had already submitted previously to the call for ideas, you're great. Your old call for ideas is still good to go. But they are going to be putting in a second call for ideas that will run from January through March. So just keep an eye out. If you're on the Brownfields listserv, you will see some information from that. We, of course, will post information when that comes out as well. Or you can keep an eye out on brownfields2021.org for more information. But they will be having another call for ideas for the National Brownfields Conference in January through March 2021. On HMPRI side of the house, we are planning on, we had submitted our own call for ideas for 2021, and we are planning on having a booth space as well at the National Brownfields Conference, and it is a EWGJT booth. So it is a spot for you guys to be able to have an area to set out materials and sort of think of it as your own little corner in the National Brownfields Conference area to kind of promote and highlight your program as well. Kind of similar to what we did in the 2019 National Brownfields Conference as well. So, you know, we're going to kind of really utilize that as an opportunity and a space for grantees to really highlight their programs. So we will have that. And then at this time, too, we are planning on having a affiliate event, so an in-person kind of event. As of right now, that's kind of the game plan that we're looking at right before the start of the National Brownfields Conference in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma as well. So hopefully we'll get to see everybody's smiling faces, fingers crossed, as well. So that's kind of the rough plan that we are looking at. As for the annual all grantee meeting, you know, typically that's something that we hold in the summer, but because of the timing of the National Brownfield Conference, we are looking at doing another virtual offering in the early spring. So that's kind of our HMTRI news. We are looking at doing something, actually, sorry, make that more late spring. We're looking at two options in the April and May range. So in order to learn more about when we would be able to hold that, we actually have two dates that we are sending out to you guys in the form of a scan. So we are going to kind of want to get your opinion on that as well as a few other items. So to kind of talk to you a little bit more about that scan that we are sending out, I'm actually going to toss it over to Steve.
All right. Thanks, Heather. And hello, everyone. As she mentioned, the scan is probably in your inbox. I think it was sent out today. And there's two dates. That's the first question. We're trying to find out what your preference is in terms of the April-May timeline. We're going to be doing 3 days again, 3 hours a day, very similar to what we did last time. So that's the first question on the scan. Then we are trying to do a little check on how you're doing. It's kind of like a snapshot in time where we have a series of questions that most of them you can just kind of click and give us your feedback on what you're doing now in terms of training, if you are doing training. We've got a pre-populated list of classes and then whether or not they're being offered in person, online, a hybrid, or any other combination. And so then, you know, we also have technical and non-technical courses listed, so you could hopefully give us some feedback on that. And again, the method of how you're delivering training, if you are. And then also we're looking at trying to capture information on challenges that you're having at this time, as well as any best practices or things that you're doing, you know, that would be somewhat innovative. And so we're trying to capture this information. There's like 10 questions. The first is the date of the conference that you prefer, and then 9 kind of questions about this particular snapshot in time. And our what we're thinking is we're hopefully going to get feedback from everyone and then be able to kind of present what we've learned on that first PLC call that Mike referenced that will be back in January. So hopefully we'll be able to give you more information on what we've collected at that time. Also, after we get these dates nailed down, we're going to probably be following that up after the first of the year also with possible topics, and that'll be another scan that we'll send out to you to give us, you know, your feedback on possible topics for the conference. So that'll be coming too. So those are things to look forward to. When you get that scan, if you could fill that out and return it to us as soon as possible, that'd be very helpful. So thank you. Mike?
Yeah, this is a very tough year, and you all know how tough it is. We're in uncharted territory, and go ahead.
I was going to say,
someone,
Mike, before you dive into the PLC, I'm going to do take one more second. I did want to introduce real quick Corey on the line. Corey's kind of been our HMTRI member behind the scenes, but you guys are going to start seeing some PLC posts from her, some listserv posts from her. So I just wanted her to take a moment just to say hi to you all real quick, so that way you can kind of put a voice to the name that you're going to start seeing on some of our listserv posts coming in.
Hi, this
and of
is
course,
Corey.
Any of you, hey, Corey, any of you who want to contact us, there's two ways of contacting us. Heather, why don't you give, for those of you who may, someone told you, why don't you call his number on this date and see what you see, and you're not getting post-session notes. So why don't, Heather is our primary contact. So Heather, why don't you give them your email? So that, and all you have to do is send her your email and say, put me on the list. Now, for the 13th, for the news cycle, you don't have to do anything. Unless you don't want to participate, then you just say remove. But if you want to just keep on getting post-session notes, just send that contact information, if you're not already getting them, to Heather. And Heather, what's that email?
It is hkballou@eicc.edu. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu.
And you can throw any question you have at her. You can make your complaints or ask questions or sign up, anything you want to do. Or if you want us to ask something of EPA that you're concerned about, just send her a note. There is a second way. When we send out these post-session notes, they go out every Friday. It's a summary of what we're talking about today and then some little additional information and website so you don't have to take any notes. You could just respond to those, and we'll get them. You just respond to the PLC notes and say whatever you want to say. Additions, subtractions, if you would like to highlight your program, or particularly if you're doing something special, either to Heather or to the post-session notes, just let us know about what's going on, because we usually like to post in the post-session notes, what's happening with the grantees, and if you've got something special going on, a graduation or whatever, just please let us know. We'd like to tell everyone about that. As I said, we're really in uncharted waters, and the EPA is aware of this. I think we're all trying to hobble through this year until these vaccines kick in, and we're all hopeful that it'll be this summer. The Office of Grants and Debarments, they set the terms for these grants, have put in certain guidelines. And in fact, in the session notes, I'll put a question we had in terms of extensions and low-cost extensions. Essentially, their position is that due to COVID, they will understand extensions to grants. There'll have to be no-cost extensions, whatever was the original grant amount. They'll also entertain review and perhaps alteration of work plans. This is probably more concerning to those who are more mature in your grant rather than the new grantees. You've got plenty of time left to go. Those of you who are anticipating either closing out or closing out in the next year may want to pay this more attention. And their basic position is contact your regional coordinator and start talking to them, establish a dialogue, and they certainly understand what you're up against and see what they need to do. They will bring it up with prearrange whatever you need to do and then talk to the grants office so that everything is official, so that there's not a problem and there's no surprises at the end. When you want to do that is kind of up to you. we have a range of people that are kind of hobbling through but delivering some training. We've got people who are totally shut down. And hopefully by the 13th, that one of the reasons for this scan is we're going to be able to get a little better idea of, you know, who's completely shut down or what courses are. A lot of people are doing the non-tech courses, or they're doing the OSHA courses that don't require face-to-face. There's some that are even going ahead and doing a HAZWOPER 40, and they're doing some face-to-face work. So we've got a whole range of people, and I can't tell you whether one's right or one's wrong. I have to commend those who are forging ahead and able to find instructors or have their own that are able to do 40-hour complete courses. It's something that everyone's grappling with. Even NIEHS is grappling big time with this, trying to figure out how do we do these basically HAZWOPER 40-hour, OSHA 10, OSHA 30. Those contact courses become much more trickier and will often depend on your local health restrictions and, more importantly, your trainers, whether they feel comfortable or able or have figured out some way of doing some of this work. It also depends on your target group. We've got target groups. Everybody's got computers. We've got target groups that nobody has computers. We have target groups that they're lucky if they have phones. So, and as those of you who were on the call last week, we've got people in remote places that are actually doing mail order training. So it's the whole spectrum, and really you can't really say you're doing it right or you're doing it wrong, because the beauty of this program is the huge amount of diversity, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But it's the beauty of it, but it's also the issues, and every grant has to be handled on its own and its own particular situations. And fortunately, the regional coordinators understand that, and the grants office understands that. So as we move forward into the next cohort, I think this will pop up several times again. So let's talk about expectations of EPA and what's going to be happening in the next cohort. We're anticipating, now everything I say is conjecture, because I think even EPA, we have a new project officer, they're all working remotely. They're under the same constraints that everybody else is, so I'm not sure how their schedule is going to work out, what their anticipations are, the money they have budgeted. But we can do some strategic thinking of what's happened in the past, and that's pretty much, and we'll put those in the notes as we usually do, what we think the schedule might look like. And the way that schedule to me seems to think about those of you who submitted application this last summer will probably be getting the award notices, I would think, in February. They might surprise us and go early. They might surprise us, and because of the slowdown in government, that may be extended. But if we're talking about that time, that'll be right in the middle of our next cohort of PLC calls. Hopefully we'll get 15 people who are very deserving, and we'll get some new people, and it should be exciting because we had one last year, and they can't repeat. If they got one last year, they can't repeat, so we'll have a lot of brand new grantees. Nice thing about that, if it happens in February, then we're talking about our virtual all-grantee meeting in April, May, so that we'll have a whole crop of new grantees or re-upped grantees that will be able to participate in the virtual all-grantee meeting. Through that time period between February or March, when you get your award, and the beginning of summer, you'll be doing finalizing work plans, working with the grants people, locking down, getting your authorization to spend funds, and that brings you into the summer where you'll be able to start recruiting in late summer, looking forward to your first training cohort in the fall. And then, of course, at that point, you're on the road and you're ready to roll. And that's kind of what we see the schedule being now. We're anticipating another round coming up for those of you who don't have a grant right now, or if your grant's coming due, it'll probably be the same restrictions that if you if you're awarded one in February, you won't be able to rebid or re-up just for this one. But if you got one two cycles ago, not that cycle, but the one before, you'll be able to re-up. And so we're looking forward to keeping our grantees and getting some new ones. So does anyone have any questions on what they think is going to be happening? Now, as far as the training program goes, I expect it's going to be pretty much the same. This program is fairly stable. Sometimes an office will come in or go out, whether it's off the pesticides. Air is not in it now. They've tried to get air. Maybe they'll come into this program. We'll have to see the particulars. But for the mainstay, it comes out of Office Solid Waste Emergency Response. So for these will be hazardous waste-centric grants. They'll have to do with recycling, solid waste, hazardous waste cleanup, and all of the other things that we've been talking about for the last several months. So, anyone have any questions or concerns about what's coming up here in the next 6 or 8 months? That happens. Okay. Well, let's speak a little bit about diversity in the workforce. We've had 3 PLCs, Recycle Force, Oregon Tradeswomen, and Zender Environmental. And we did this to promote this whole theme of who's in your classroom. And as I've said before, and keep saying, every program is different. We have some target-centric, like Recycle Force, that may work on returning citizens. We've got Zender, who is working with indigenous people in Alaska, Oregon Tradeswomen, who's working with 100% women. But there's 3 examples. We have a huge variety of grantees who are working with everyone and different types of people. And what we want to do, and the purpose of these 3, were to talk about if you want to diversify your classroom, and certainly there's nothing wrong and actually commendable if you're picking out a really underserved group. You've chosen your target group as indigenous people in a rural area, or you've chosen a group that is ex-offenders or women or whatever that group is, and actually being innovative and picking up a underserved group that nobody has helped is really commendable. Many of you, though, will be, when you choose your target group, and later we'll be talking about looking at community assessment, but your target group may be, say, we're going to do Southeast Georgia, or we're going to do Western North Carolina. You're not really specifying the type of person you're going after. You're looking at a region, and that's pretty much often what EPA is asking for. What is your target community? Well, let's think about that for a minute. In that target community, you certainly have ethnic, and particularly in your urban areas, you have ethnic diversity. You've got socioeconomic diversity. You've got people who have means, have computers, have phones, have cars, and have nothing. That's another issue. You've got academic diversity. You've got people who haven't been in a classroom in 30 years. And you've got some that are just coming out of school, coming out of prison, are very used to the classroom setting and the expectations of the classroom. You've got chronological or age diversity, where some of you may have people who are in their 40s or 50s or even 60s, and you've got some that are again, 20. And then you've got geographical diversity. You may have a situation, even though you've got a target group in the city, you may have a diversity in terms of where they're coming from. They're coming from the east side and some are coming from the west side, and there may or may not be a bus route to your training center or to your jobs that you're identifying. So all of these types of things you're facing, and this is a good time. And as you start planning your program, or even if you've got a program and thinking about your next cohort, who do you want to recruit and what type of person you're going after? And do you want to have a narrow classroom that everyone is pretty much the same, or do you want to have a wide classroom? And sometimes you don't have a choice. If you've got returning citizens, you've got people who are coming out that are just out of high school or never went to high school, and you've got people who have been in prison for 20 years and are coming out. And that, as we talked to Recycle Force, has some real advantages. They do, and many of these programs that we highly recommend, a best practice, they have these circles in the morning, and everyone sits around in a circle. And often they'll talk, and the people who have more experience can talk about their experiences with people who have no experience or younger people. They also serve as role models. Now, because someone's been in prison for 20 years doesn't mean he's not a role model. He's had lots of experiences, lots of learning, and sometimes, probably more often than not, his message to those young people is probably more powerful than an instructor or someone who comes in from the inside, someone who has been there and done that and paid the price and has come out and is into one of these training programs is going to be your best instructor. And they'll mentor and they'll befriend the people that need the help. So that certainly is a strong argument for age dispersity. We also have the issue of whether gender disparity and whether we want to have a gender-neutral program. Do we want to have women in the classroom? Well, we need to have women in the classroom. Some of our programs, I think of Cypress Mandela, maybe 50% women. You may have people in Alaska, 30 or 40%. You may have some that have all women, some that have less women. Well, how do you cater to all these different groups? If you have indigenous people, how do you keep the indigenous people engaged in your program? And this discussion, it's partially about what do you want your classroom to look like, but it's also very heavily involved in retention rates, recruitment and retention. For example, if you're interested in having a diverse classroom, a gender-neutral classroom, you have to ask yourself now, not after you've got this program going, are your instructors, do you have female instructors? I don't know how many people could say they do. Are your graduation pictures that you're posting on your website, what does your graduation class look like? Now, picture yourself, I'm thinking of joining a program, and I look at your graduation picture, and there's nobody there that looks like me. Well, you can't say after your recruitment's over that, oh, gee, our class is pretty monolithic. Everybody, you know, they're all about the same. And if that's what you want, that's what you're going to get, whether you want it or not. So you really have to start thinking about your marketing material. What does your marketing material look like? What do your graduation pictures look like? What do your trainers look like? You have to ask yourself, do you have any, particularly on a gender-neutral program, do you have female alumni? If you're working with indigenous people, do you have role models that have been through your program? Do you have American Indians that have gone into industry and are coming back to talk to the class and talk to the recruitment class? Are they participating? These are partners, so they could help you in recruitment. Are they talking to their peers, say, I went through this program and look at me? And if you want to attract, or if you're working with that target group, you've got to work with that. If you're going to be working with indigenous people, you better make sure your graduation pictures reflect that. You better make sure that your instructors reflect that. And of course, as I said earlier, it's too late to talk about that when you're program planning, because those are strategic decisions that are actually made before you even get started. Who are we and what do we want to address and who do we want to address? There are some, you also want to showcase these successful alumni. But when we talk to, as we become more tactical in our recruitment, where are we soliciting for our recruitment, our applicants? I think a very good point was brought out with Oregon Tradeswomen. We have a gender neutral program, primarily female, but where do we focus our posters, laundromats? Now I would ask all of you out there, how many of you post posters and recruitment in laundromats or grocery stores? Ex-offenders, where are you going to go in recruiting? Now, maybe returning citizens, many of those people are recommended to you. So it's not, perhaps it might be a caseworker, or that becomes more of a screening issue. But again, you want to have your program reflect the type of program you want to have. So again, don't be surprised if you don't have any women if you're only recruiting in gyms, that type of thing. So all of those things are important in terms of how do you get a diverse program. And again, you have to ask the question, do we want a diverse program? And it's a fair question, particularly in this time of COVID. We have many programs where some people have computers, others don't. Some have phones, others don't. Do you take care of that in your screening or your recruitment? So we've got three steps. You've got screening and recruitment. You've got recruitment and application. And even before that is what we're talking about today. Your decision from a management strategic point of view is what kind of program do we want to have? Do we want to open this to everyone? And we have to remember, if we're going to open this to everyone, can we support the people we're recruiting? For example, and this came out very clearly when we talked to Recycle Force, for those of you who were there, returning citizens have tremendous amount of issues, baggage, consequences of incarceration. They have PTSD. Many have health issues. Many have mental issues. They have obligations to pay, financial obligations. They have to pay for their incarceration, or whether it's tracking devices, whether it's fines. They're going to be having to talk to caseworkers, parole officers. Now, if you're deciding you're going to go after, and I've seen many applications, we're going to do ex-offenders. We're going to do, that's a good thing to put in the application. Looks good. But you better ask yourself the question, can you support an ex-offender?
Hey, Michael?
Can you genuinely, yes, sir.
Yeah, this is Paul from Recycle Force.
Yes, Paul.
If I may, on some of the points you're talking about, we've had some new learnings here, and we've opened up a program to transgenders. And that's a whole nother level of necessary support and training for our staff and our team leadership on the floor. So we're going through that process. You had mentioned also about the circle, and we had a gentleman just this morning who graduated from Recycle Force. He came here after spending 43 years in prison, with 10 of those years on death row, and was going to be electrocuted. And he came within 25 hours of the electrocution, and then he received a governor's pardon at that time. So he talked with our group this morning. And then in regards to charitable giving donations, even though it's extremely difficult, we do that, but we also know that sustainability is the key, because everyone's going through rough times right now. So during this Christmas or holiday season, we just established a national partnership for the first time with Toys for Tots, and they were able to supply Christmases for several of our families here, in addition to local partnerships who were able to get the balance there. So there's a lot of learnings out there We're learning a lot from our transgender population. It's a whole other set of skill sets and accommodations. So just as Michael mentioned, just be aware that as one considers to broaden their client base, there's a lot of things that go along with that. We have a phone lady that we're partnered with, and for those that don't have phones or for those that have been robbed of their phones, sometimes once a week she comes in as needed, and we get them phones. We have relationships, I think, as I mentioned before, with banks, and they've provided additional computers, not only to interface for training, but also to use, you know, an interaction with their bank accounts with this bank. So it's just a layered upon layers of services, partnerships. And you had mentioned OAI, and we've worked for 3 years, and we're finally part of the OAI team out of Chicago. So we're going to, we feel very fortunate to be part of that team. And then once our cycle completes, then we can reapply with, you know, with the EPA side. But as Michael continuously says, you know, get as much learnings as possible, because the dynamics are constantly changing with the population that we serve. And then depending on the, if the moratorium on evictions is lifted this coming month, that could be another 10, 15, 20 plus million more people that may not have a place to reside. And that's going to overfill our ability to provide services to all them. So it's going to be very critical that we clearly define who our client base is. And it may change dramatically if the evictions are allowed. So, we'll, you know, we're trying to see what that looks like for us and how that may impact how we serve our clients also. So I just wanted to share that.
That's fantastic. And I think you might be the first to say that if someone is going to go after ex-offenders, you better put an asterisk by that and make sure that all the services you provide they can provide, or what you're going to end up with is someone who's going to drop out of the program, simply enough, because they won't be able to make the court dates. We have programs where you miss a class, you're out. You know, two strikes, you're out. And Paul, the feeling I get about your program is you've got to be incredibly tolerant.
Yes, and it's basically patience. But building failure into the program. And, you know, with, you know, a certain client base, you can have the two or three attempts there, but we're dealing with a client base now where that it may be 20, 30 times. You know, we're writing letters. We had another gentleman that was doing very well within our program and was getting ready to be off all paper from his incarceration here shortly. But then there was a charge that came in out of state. So he had to hop a bus to, and that was from 20, you know, from 7, 8 years ago. So we wrote a letter to the court in support of his progress made here, and that we're going to maintain his employment regardless of the outcome of his case from 7, 8 years ago. We also have partnerships with legal teams that are working for us pro bono that are helping to expunge some of the background that are allowed to be expunged. Also, they're working with the DMV to reduce or eliminate fines, get driver's license reinstated, you know, child support, working with them and all those things. But it takes a robust wraparound services to deal if you go with a broad client base. But that's what we're set up to do. We're set up in our program to build in multiple failures. And with the new acceptance within our program in the transgender community, let me assure you, it's a whole different set of skill sets. But the end goal is same, right? For us, you know, we had a recidivism rate at 23%, and depending on what you look at locally and nationally, it's anywhere from 55 to 75%. But we just got our new numbers in, and our recidivism rate is now down to 17%. So we know that the effort is worthwhile to go from 23 down to 17%, but it takes a lot of work, right? It takes a lot of commitment and passion, and it's finding people that are on the team, the staff that provide for our clients that are truly committed, because you can't, we're not here because of the money, you know, it's
right.
but it's a passion and an advocacy, right? So from that standpoint, we just have to work together and help each other. And like I said, I'm available anytime to answer emails or questions. So I just want to put that forth to the group.
That's amazing. And we'll be watching you on this transgender target group. It sounds like it's loaded with issues, and you're exactly right. We get paid in hugs and smiles, and that's enough. It really works well, very rewarding. But we do need to be able to survive, as we're all struggling with as we speak. Very interesting. Any other comments? Now, you know, Paul is on the, he's on an extreme, and it shows you the beautiful diversity of our whole program. Paul is on an extreme difficult situation. Amy in Alaska is in an extremely different, totally different set of circumstances. She can't, they have to fly into their villages. How do you place people when there's, you know, 300 in a village, and how do you train them, and you've got people speaking different languages, totally different. And so, of course, we're talking extremes and difficult grantees, which we could all learn from, because if they could do that, maybe we could do adapt some of the things like circles that I think more and more grantees are finding this is really beneficial. That gentleman that was on death row probably was your best instructor. He's going to turn a life around for many kids. So I think that's definitely out there. Many of our grantees, they may have ex-offenders, but it's a drug charge, and they may just have to go into court, or they may need a little bit of assistance, and it's not as much as Paul's program. But I think if we could look at the best practices that you've gone through, the learning pains, and to the extent that we could learn from you, we could adapt some of those strategies to deal with that, just like the gender neutral programs. Maybe we ought to think about recruiting in a laundromat, or maybe we ought to think about let's make sure we can get a woman instructor or a woman-owned construction company that could come in and speak to our group. These are these best practices that could bring our program into a more diverse type program. Remember, we're an EJ program, and we're supposed to be addressing underserved populations. And men are not the only underserved population on this earth. In fact, it's quite different than that. And so we have to keep in mind, and more of our programs, we're seeing 30, 40, 50% women who can use this program to become self-sufficient. And many are single mothers, have had issues with the law, and this program could go a long way towards helping those people. So I think it's mostly keeping an open mind and learning from Paul and learning from Amy and Lynn, and seeing what they're doing in their program. Anyone like to say anything? Well, we'll be convening again on the 13th of January. And I hope you all have a happy holiday and can get through this season COVID-free. And we'll get to work again and try to keep these grants coming and keep everybody's program going the best we can. So till then, we'll just see you. Then I'm going to put on the notes some examples of OAI's program. Last time I suggested all of you go to Zender's program because it's really good on their website about their program. But now I'd like you to, and I'll put in the notes, go to OAI's program to learn what they're doing for donations, charitable giving. And when you go to their website, just click on donations, and it'll bring you to a whole other set of sites about what they're doing. And while one, and I'm not, and they're both excellent and they're both needed, one focuses on their students and their courses and their technology, and here's another one that's focused, OAI is more focused on marketing and awareness and donations. So just to, if you have a chance, click on Zender's and look what theirs looks like. Click on OAI's and kind of just graze through when you have a couple of days when you want to get away from everyone else, and just tell them you've got to check out these websites to see what they're doing. Well, with that, I think we'll call it a year. And hopefully any comments, send them to Heather or to me, and we'll see you all next year.
Take care, Mike. Happy holidays.
Yeah.
You thanks, all take Mike. Care.
Thanks, Mike. Happy holidays, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Happy holidays.
Yeah, bye.
Bye, everyone.